What makes you desirable in the dating world? Status, looks, money, they don't matter. Worth comes from within. I'm Alex Orlando. I help people transform, and this is Dating and Authenticity.
Hey everybody, it's Frankie and Alex is here. Hey Alex, how are you doing?
Hiya, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. This is one of my favorite topics, so I'm excited to talk about it.
I know. It's so big. It's so big. It goes in so many different directions. So tell us about the topic. What are we talking about today?
So I briefly touched on it at the end of last week's show, and the topic is hypergamy. And if you just search for a quick definition of hypergamy is what's known as dating up. So the idea is that we have a perceived sense of our worth, and we look to date somebody who we see as being a couple of levels higher than us. And this is particularly relevant in this day and age for men who feel that women are only attracted to a man who has more power, status, or wealth than they do. And I actually touched on this topic because last week I happened to stumble upon an article in a UK website, which was written by an Australian dating coach. And she listed the 5 personality and looks traits that female clients are particularly attracted to. So I'll just go through those really, really briefly. So for personality, it was humor, loyalty, honesty, intelligence, and kindness. For looks, it was eyes, smile, good teeth, height, and penis size. So none of those come as a huge surprise to me. But it was when I stumbled through the comments, there was a lot of hate from men towards women. So I'll just read through some of the comments made by the male readers. So the top rated one was someone else to pay the bills. The second top rated one was you forgot money. The third top rated one was money 100%. And then this comment I found particularly interesting, which was be tall, attractive and muscular, and you'll find that women will laugh at all of your jokes and agree with everything you say. Be a short and unattractive man and tell the exact same jokes and say the same things as the attractive man, and women will deem you creepy, cringy and a loser. They'll also make you the butt of every joke and humiliate you at every possible opportunity. The only cheat card is to have money, but then the women will probably go for a quick divorce shortly after marriage and take you for everything that you have before settling up with another champ. That's all you need to know about women. So
Oh my God. That's so brutal. It's just mean. And it's anyway. Okay, go ahead.
You don't have to be a genius to read that and work out that there's a problem. There's a huge problem. And what's so startling about that is that we're almost looking at hatred from men towards women there. And it sounds like this is years and years and years of perception from a lot of men, because this is a narrative that's fairly commonly pushed out. But it's being pushed out in such a vindictive, nasty way towards women. So when I read that, I actually felt very sorry for most of the female readers, but also most women in the world that are coming into contact with men that think that. So it led me to kind of think a little bit about how's it got to that point, because it seems odd. You have 2 genders that essentially want the same thing and should be able to come together and meet in the middle and achieve that same thing. You know, be that a monogamous relationship, be that a friends with benefits type of situation, or even just be it a friendship. But for whatever reason, it's not quite happening. And the two genders are just getting pushed further and further apart. And I think something that's really, really keen to say is that women wanting a man with status and women wanting a man with power is a trend. And trends appear whenever you do a survey across a wide range of people. So if you were to ask 500 women what they wanted in a man, you'd see a wide range of things. So things like height would be in there, eye color would be in there, build would be in there, job would be in there, education level would be in there, emotional intelligence would be in there. There would be so many things. But the key thing to say is that these would just be trends. These would not be the be all and end all. But one final point just to add as well, and I think this is probably the root of where the hatred comes from. So in psychology, there's a lot of talk about objectification theory. And objectification theory is something that a lot of women feel in their day-to-day lives, because it essentially is involved. Essentially, objectification theory is when a woman feels depersonalized and just judged for the way that she looks. Then as a result of that, she then develops heightened awareness of her looks. And then she begins to continuously compare herself more and more and more and more. And as it carries on, she just develops a heightened sense of self-awareness and a heightened sense of self-criticism as a result. And this is exactly what we're seeing men do with their money. The interesting thing is that not only are men objectifying themselves, they're also following a path of entitlement. So entitlement theory really begins when a man begins to benchmark his position in the dating world. So this is probably going to be based on what he sees his biggest strength as being. So in a lot of cases, and in the case of this article, it's going to be money and it's going to be status. And it will usually be based around how he perceives himself in relation to his working peers, his friends, and how he perceives himself in his upbringing. So someone that comes from a middle class or an upper class upbringing is likely to perceive that they are of higher value to people from a class below. And as he carries on, he continues to benchmark his success more and more. And the higher his success goes, the more entitled he feels into having a higher caliber of women. But what is going on here is that the man's actually not seeing that, yes, he may have the money, but there's so many other things that he's yet to work through. So a lot of guys will particularly think that now they have money, that's it, I'm ready. Any woman I want is mine. But they're coming and they're going into the dating world with so many unresolved things from their past. Some of them may have, you know, shame around sex. Some of them may have a negative relationship with their mother that they're still trying to work through, but they're playing it out with women that they date. Some of them may have a really poor relationship with women due to a previous relationship they've had. It just goes on, but they're not seeing that. So they're kind of internalizing this message that women only want money and hearing that. And when they're not getting the result that they expect, they either decide that women are just gold diggers, or they just refuse to accept that there's a problem there and there's a problem within themselves. So the coaching work for me really becomes about kind of taking a few steps back, understanding that, knocking the bridges down and getting them to a point where it's great that they're successful, but they've got so much else alongside it too.
Right. Wow. You know, it's great to hear you actually say it, because, you know, nobody actually says it, even though it's kind of running in the background of people's minds, right? So then an article like that comes out, and then it's an opportunity for the men, like the ones that did, to actually just go and really just kind of vomit what their real thoughts are about it. And, you know, they have the filter of the platform. You know, they're not going to, they don't talk like that in the real world, right?
So, yeah, and I think that's the case with any online platform, be it something like what I've just discussed or be it social media. There's always going to be that opportunity to air things from the safety of being behind something. And I think it's just so interesting that it feels like in the case that I just gave, you're giving these men an opportunity, and not only are they fully taking that opportunity, they're venting everything, kind of years and years and years and years of negative feeling towards the opposite gender. And it should not be like that. It absolutely should not be like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's almost, I know I tend to, or some of my friends tend to, depending on what side they're on. Well, me personally, I'll speak for myself. You know, you can kind of tell a man who is very much about his things. And if they're in a car, a certain car or something, right? When I was online dating and there's like, you know, a guy with his car, you know, it's like, wow, I'm happy for you, but wow, you know, like it's almost like a thing to avoid, because there is all this stuff behind it that I personally didn't want to have to deal with, you know? So if somebody has, I have a real problem personally with people who have a more, they're more concerned about things than people, right? So my things, like watch my car or don't do, you know, like, of course we have to respect our belongings. But when people take it to a point where it's just like, that's their obsession or that's their first priority, as a woman or as a partner of somebody who's going to be with somebody like that, you're going to be second to all of their things.
What you've just described there perfectly sums up the idea of someone who is dating from their ego. And when you start dating from your ego, everything gets lost in translation, because you're not expressing or being who you are. So you're constantly validating yourself. But the caveat to that is, when someone's not giving you the validation that you're giving yourself, you feel resentment, and subconsciously you feel dislike towards that person because they've not given you what you think you're worth, or rather they've not given you what your ego thinks you're worth. And that is only ever going to be a recipe, A, for two people consistently pushing each other away, because essentially it becomes an ego versus ego match rather than a person-to-person relationship. But also it's never rewarding, because there's so many kind of stories going on below the surface that aren't actually being voiced. And the best bit of advice anybody can have if they want to date, and they want to date successfully and enjoyably, is to kill your ego, because your ego has absolutely no place in enjoyment of life, fulfillment of life, because it is a false construct which you do not need to have and you should not rely on.
So how does somebody do that?
So I think the biggest step that someone has to take is to just really focus on what they have about themselves that they love that isn't external. And for me, self-love is key. And for me, self-love underpins so much of what I try to do myself and so much what I try and get my clients to see as well. But a really good example of self-love is when you start dating and you are not focused on the outcome at all. So you go on a couple of dates with someone and maybe you begin to develop feelings for that person, but you don't become invested in the outcome in terms of needing it to work. Because when you become invested in the outcome and you need it to work, essentially what you're saying is, I can't handle the rejection if this person doesn't give me what I want. So what you need to do is you need to get yourself to a point where if someone turns around and they say, look, it's not working with you, you're genuinely, genuinely happy for that person. And once you can get to that point and you have that level of self-love that you're not reliant on other people validating you, your ego instantly begins to go after that. And then it kind of becomes a cycle, because you're then beginning to be yourself a lot more, because you've got a lot more confidence in yourself and a lot more validation in yourself coming from yourself. So then you see that people actually like me for me, people actually want to be with me for me, and people are actually attracted to me for me. And that's when it starts to get really, really exciting. And that's when dating begins to become fun, because the ego element is not there. You're just authentically being yourself.
Okay. So yeah. And rejection is such a huge thing, right? It's almost a thing that drives people. Another background conversation that doesn't stop, right? Like, I don't want to be rejected. I really like this person. What if they reject me? What if they don't like me back? All that. It's kind of running all the time. How do you shut that up?
Well, if we're talking about it in the context of this conversation, so we're looking at it from a hypergamous perspective, and we're looking at it from the idea that people will want me when I have certain things, you can't be doing that. Because once you decide that you need to have certain things for people to want you, you're already rejecting yourself. Because if you think about what's going on in the background, you're saying, me as an individual isn't good enough for this person. Me as an individual isn't good enough for this person until I have this. So rejection is going to feel so strong, because you haven't already built up that self-worth to say, look, maybe there's just a really high chance that this person is just not right for me. Their values don't align to me, and what we want is completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then your work with your clients is kind of getting them to really understand what their values truly are, and you know, what's great about them, so that they actually can have that for themselves and in all over their lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. What's fun for them, and what's going to give them the biggest fulfillment with somebody? Because to go a little bit broader, but I think it's relevant to say at this point, relationships by nature are transactional. So when you start a relationship with somebody, even, you know, be it a working relationship, a friendship, or in this case, a dating relationship, you're both bringing something to the equation. So one individual will have a certain strength, a certain set of beliefs and a certain set of values, and the other person will have a certain set of strengths and a certain set of beliefs and a certain set of values. So when the two come into the middle, you really want to see how it goes and whether they're aligned. But if you're coming into the middle with a set of values that you don't actually have yourself, you're coming with a set of values that you think you should have, you're not being yourself, you're not being authentic to yourself. So of course it's not ever going to work. And it's so important to say at this point that the more time you spend with somebody and the more you get to know somebody, it has to be fun. and it should be fun straight from the beginning, and you should be excited when you think of that person. But it's very, very hard to do that, because if we're thinking of hypergamy again, a lot of men, and I think women do this too with their own, you know, with their own thought process, but we're putting things on ourselves which don't feel exciting. They just feel like expectations. And then when you put an expectation on yourself, things begin to feel heavy. You're not being yourself because you're constantly measuring up to that expectation. You're not being yourself because you're thinking, I constantly need to get above this expectation. So it just gets more and more draining. And the more drained you are, and the more you're being around somebody as that more drained version of you, the less enjoyable it is for that person too. So of course they're not going to want to take anything further with you.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm going to pause you there for a minute and let people know that if they have a question, they can call in 516 area code 666-9512. And if you're in the UK, you can reach us through Skype and that number, 516-666-9512. And I just actually had a text come in or a message come in, a question actually from Tyler from Chicago. He says, I feel like the more money I make, the more confident I feel in approaching women. Is there another approach?
What an interesting question. And that's absolutely a question that I think is on the tip of a lot of men's lips. So I'm hearing two things from that. I'm hearing one reference to, sorry, what did you say his name was again?
Tyler from Chicago.
So on one hand, I'm hearing a reference to Tyler towards his self-worth, because it seems that he's linking his self-worth to his money. And then the other thing that I'm also hearing is that money is something that he is prioritizing. So the question that I first ask is for Tyler is, what does money mean to you? Is money something that you want, or is money something that you feel that you need to have? Because it's two very, very different things. And if it's an expectation and it's a burden that you have to earn a certain amount of money to feel worthy of a woman, then that's a problem, because it's just going to be a cycle that will just carry on and carry on and carry on. But I would also, the kind of positive part to that question too is, if he's noticing that women are becoming attracted to him more because he's got money, it could also be that as he feels he's becoming more successful, he's beginning to project a better version of himself, because he is feeling more confident, he's feeling more outgoing, he's feeling more articulate, and he's expressing himself a little bit more. And if you take those four things, those would be really, really attractive to most women anyway, because they'd be exciting to be around. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. One of those is money associated with self-worth, which I'd argue is not good. But then on the other hand, if money is coming with increased self-worth, then that's great as well.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that if he doesn't have, like, you know, money comes and goes, you know, I've had cycles in my life where I've had a lot of money and then I don't have money and stuff, that's just kind of life. And, you know, so people lose their wealth all the time. And, you know, if he's had all this wealth and it makes him confident and top of the world, when it's gone, that's a measure for his, you know, tied into his self-worth, and then he feels worthless. So,
and of course, the other side of that too is that money is actually quantifiable. You can actually say how much money's worth, because money is explicitly a currency. So when I'm working with a client and I say that I want to build their self-worth and I want them to see them continue to grow and develop, talking about how fulfilled they feel and how happy they feel is something that they feel, but it's not quantifiable. Whereas money is actually quantifiable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you know, to be fair, I know that this is a real thing, because I've had women that I've known that have definitely pursued men for that, for money or for, you know, status and all that. And it's not worked out as far as I can see. There's always some, There's a lot missing there. While certain things are handled and you have things, but, you know, there's so much missing.
It's really interesting you say that, because my mind goes to, it's an example that's quite often discussed in the world of dating and relationships when you talk about a gold digger. And I'm not for a second saying that the people you know are gold diggers at all, but my mind just goes to a specific example that's given. So you have the stereotypical older, wealthy, successful man who might not necessarily be super attractive. He's just successful and he's worked hard and he's got everything that he wants financially. And he decides that he wants a woman. So he automatically thinks, I have this amount of money. I want an attractive woman, because his life has been around being successful and seeing other people being successful. So automatically he correlates in his mind, the more attractive a girlfriend I have, the more successful people will see me. And then you have a woman on the other hand who has had a lot of praise, a lot of affirmation, and a lot of respect towards the way that she looks. So she's built up an idea in her head of what she needs to look like in order to feel valued in society. So for her to feel more valued, she thinks, I know, I'll go for a wealthy man. So it's kind of like the two of them meet perfectly, because they both have the same shared objective of looking good for the world and, you know, having this transaction of doing just that. So the relationship goes really, really well. And as it kind of plods along, maybe the woman's looks begin to change as she gets a little bit older. Maybe the man loses a little bit of wealth as the economic situation changes. But the two of them drift apart, because the transaction that they had at the start of the relationship is now broken, because she's not as attractive as she once was. And he's not as successful as he was. It doesn't mean that when they first met, they didn't love each other or didn't desire each other. It just meant that they've drifted apart, because their meeting that they first had together was based around a very external thing.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, for sure. Well, we have another question, and you know what's really cool, people can call in live and ask questions or send us messages, and then during the week we have people that ask us questions, and we record them. So we're going to jump to one of those right now. You ready for that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It seems that the more successful I am, the smaller my dating pool is. Why is that? And what can I do?
Again, another brilliant question. And I really like that this has come from a woman as well, because this is fascinating. So there's a real, real kind of elephant in the room that needs to be expressed here. And I think some men listening to this will probably deny it. But the idea of meeting a woman who is more successful than you financially, on the surface can feel very, very daunting and very intimidating. And if a woman is hot as well, so she's physically very attractive as well as earning a really good amount of money, a man is instantly going to feel, what am I bringing to the equation? You know, what am I bringing to the party? Because she's kind of taken everything that he feels that he can bring. So it's really, really interesting to hear a question that kind of reflects that, because I would imagine that there are a lot of men who probably under the surface probably feel really, really intimidated and just don't quite know what to say that. So my advice for the asker of the question is to really think about A, what sort of man you're attracted to, but B, think about how you can validate a man to make himself feel good when he's around you. So if you're attracted to somebody, rather than sticking to the surface level topics surrounding money or work or career or success, give him a chance to actually validate for himself for who he is and not what he does, or give him the chance to validate himself for how he is around you and how he makes you feel. Because once you do that, his confidence is going to rise and rise, and you yourself are going to get much more proof that A, he's a genuine guy, but also B, he's a guy that's going to be with you for far more than your success too. So it'll be a really, really powerful change in the dynamic and a really, really powerful change in the equation.
Okay. Because it sounds like she's not even getting to date in a way, you know, so does she just kind of, I think it just for her to consider maybe like kind of acknowledge men for who they are in general. Like just not because she wants to date them, but to kind of have some practice in what you're saying, in acknowledging a man for his character and, you know, all the good things about him specific.
And it's a real under the radar feeding, because most men don't want to actually admit to feeling any vulnerability or any kind of insecurity. But if a man sees a woman who appears successful, who comes across as successful, even if he just walks past her in the, you know, in the street or whatever, he's going to feel that same level of intimidation because subconsciously his mind is saying she's higher in the dating pecking order than me. So it really comes now about finding ways either, I mean, if we're thinking of a hypergamous perspective, you know, if status and wealth is important to the caller, then there's nothing to stop her going for a man who is of similar or higher wealth than her. However, if it's not, then it comes about how does she make herself feel more obtainable for the right type of guys that maybe have the right values for her.
Well, and just to this point, I mean, women are making, we're evening the playing field, like in terms of income. So if a man, I mean, you had mentioned that to me previously about, you know, the reasons in the UK specifically why they, why, you know, the cause of divorces and how that's changed. So, you know, I mean, if a man's going, building his wealth, and then there's the woman equal, what are the options?
So up until fairly recently, the most common reason for divorce was actually cited as financial difficulties or financial differences. But currently now in the UK, the number one reason for divorce actually stands as lack of commitment, which obviously can be interpreted in a whole different range of ways. But to give you another interesting stat, which is this is UK based data, but this also reinforces that hypergamous relationships are declining too, is that the gender pay gap in the UK currently stands at 8.9%, which admittedly now is far higher than it should be. But it's interesting to note that in 1997 it was 17.4%, so it's actually beginning to meet. And what we're also seeing now in the UK is as the gender pay gap goes and female salaries get higher, the difference between male and female salaries is actually a lot lower. So hypergamous relationships are actually on the decline as well anyway. So that in itself should be a real comfort for a lot of men that are always worrying about how much that they earn in order to be attractive to a woman.
Interesting. That's kind of that's another insight that I don't know that people are actually, it's not at the forefront. So kind of people, maybe men just tending to do what they've always done and then like not even realizing like, well, what if there's someone that makes as much as I do, which is now more common from what you're saying.
And just to clarify as well, I mean, I would never ever describe myself as a feminist, but I am very, very pro female rights because my part of my idea of authenticity is we live in a world where people are all treated as equal. So I'm absolutely in favor of women's rights. And as a part of, you know, as a part of that too, I think it could be really inspiring if you actually were dating a woman who had maybe maybe overcome some potential struggles in order, perhaps because of her gender, and she'd actually got to a point where she was really successful. And for me, I would find that so attractive, and I would see that as a real, real, you know, demonstration of strength.
Right. Well, because you're character focused and not.
But also, I've done the work to separate my ego from salary, and I've also done the work to separate my ego away from, you know, my career success from the person that I'm dating too. And that's a powerful mind shift switch to make because it just opens up so much more for you.
Okay. I just got another message, another question. This is from Riley in LA. I want to date an older woman, but how do I show that I'm a capable partner for a woman who does have more experience or success?
So what do you think referring to when we're referring to when we say experience? Do we just mean experience of the world, experience in the working world? What do you think that means?
I think it's just, you know, kind of in the world. I mean, if someone's older, they're going to have more worldly experience and know things perhaps that you don't know. So
there's a lot of talk in the world of dating and relationships about the idea of leagues and where people stand. And then people will often say, she's out of my league or he's out of my league. And there's, for me, looking at the social science behind it and breaking it down, you've kind of got two parts of that. on one hand, you've got dating value, which is things like looks, wealth, money, the kind of things that people see first. But then below that, you've got, in my opinion, the far more relevant aspect of it, which is social intelligence. So my hunch to answering this question would be that more experience probably indicates a higher level of social skills and social communication abilities. So for me, it's about, if you want to attract women who have more experience and you want to be seen as, I'm guessing, slightly more mature, it's about showing that you've got those social skills. And the best way to do that is just to really, really work on yourself, do the personal development stuff, look at what makes you happy, but also look at what the type of women you're attracted to are really passionate about as well. Because it's about seeing where you would like to be and working on becoming that, rather than just thinking this person is more experienced than me and therefore unobtainable. Because the work in dating always comes in developing and becoming the best version of yourself. And that's a really, really exciting point to be at.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just, you know, kind of, again, personally speaking, more experience is a great thing, but it's not the thing. You know, it's almost like, how can I say this? Like, well, I know more. You know, it becomes it becomes something that people do to have something over on other people, right? So speaking from experience, or like that I know this, or, you know, some knowing is not the best thing. It really, I feel, kind of takes away from being present with a person in the moment when you know stuff. Like, give up what you know to actually be who you are, have the other person, and like hear who, you know, and see who they are in an authentic way, as opposed to having experience be something that's so important.
Absolutely. And it's also, experience can't be compared and experience can't be measured. So two people may be completely different ages and have had two completely different life paths, but they're both going to have had experiences that are going to shape them in becoming who they are. And their experiences are going to be very valid in different situations. And their experiences are going to be transferable to different situations and different situations with different people. So it's important to the listener's question, to not think that he is less of a person because he doesn't have experience in relation to the type of, you know, women that he wants. I think there's some work to do in terms of actually looking at experiences made him and the positive things that he's taken from that experience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think as well, from seeing things like that pan out with clients, it's really, really good when someone comes to me and they say, look, this is what I want, this is the type of person that I'm attracted to. Because just to get to that point, they've already done a degree of self-reflection to think why they want what they want, and that's a brilliant start for everything.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say more of the same thing, but I'm not going to. Well, cool. We had another, it's a similar question. We had somebody send me a question and they recorded themselves. So we're going to play that, but it's in the same vein. So here we go.
I've been working to build my wealth in my career, and I don't feel I should get into a relationship right now. How much is enough, and when will I know when and if I'm ready?
How much? First thing I hear from that is, how much is enough? And I wonder why you're asking a question where you need to have that, where you need to have that answer, because that's a very, very specific question. And how much is enough is going to be when you feel that it's enough and when you feel that you're ready. And I also think that if you're starting a journey and you're building on your wealth, that's going to come with its own struggles and that's going to come with its own challenges. But what's really, really good about that is that is a journey where you're continuing to evolve and you're continuing to transform and you're continuing to become better. But if you think about your life as a journey, the fun comes in the journey and not in the destination. So if you feel emotionally ready and you don't feel that there's things from your past that are holding you back, you don't feel that there's insecurities that are holding you back, regardless of how much money you've got or regardless of how much perceived success you've got, you're absolutely ready to begin meeting people. because you're starting that journey and you're involved in that journey. And I think it's brilliant when you're passionate about something, and it's brilliant when you're working towards something, because people will see that, people will respect that, and people will be attracted to you because of that. So my advice to the listener is don't think of you're working to a point, you're working to a kind of made it point where you feel like you've got everything. Just accept you're on a journey, you're having a great time, and you're going to meet people as you go on. And that's going to be exciting, because you're going to meet people that are going to see you on your path, see you on your journey, and will then be attracted to you for your path and for your journey as well, which is just a fantastic place to be, because that's the basis of a really authentic connection with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, God, how much is enough? I mean, it's never enough. I mean, if we were to put it in context, it's never enough. There's never enough. There's always more to do or have and achieve. And
how much is enough mindset is very representative of what's going on in the world at the moment, because people are constantly aspiring for more, and you know, you see constant mottos spread around like never settle, and there's absolutely some truth to that as well. But the danger comes in if you're never settling and you're never accepting that enough is enough, you're constantly striving for more, and that's often cited as one of the main reasons for depression. And that's not a path that you want to go down to, just because it's not a worthwhile course for beating yourself up. Enough is enough when you feel confident in yourself. Enough is enough when you care about what you're doing and you're enjoying what you're doing. It's not the external reward for that that will make you feel enough.
Right. Well, talk a little bit more about that. Like, I know you've had a huge transformation you've had this experience of transforming from where you were to where you are, and now you share that with other people. So in your work, so talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't financially related, but this is related to my own personal journey with self-image. But I've spoken about it a bit on my YouTube channel, and I'm very open in terms of publicly speaking about it as well. But I have probably from the age of roughly about 19 to about 28, 29, had a very poor relationship with myself and a very, very poor relationship with food. And that led me to a prolonged periods of anorexia, quite mildly, admittedly, but also periods of bulimia, which were a little bit more severe. And the reason for that was because my mind was constantly on self-improvement, was constantly on being better. But it wasn't about being better for myself. It was about constantly being better for other people. And this goes back to what I spoke about a little at the start with the objectification theory. I was objectifying myself purely based on what my body looked like. And the more you do that, the more you get caught up in really, really small things, which just don't matter. So you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you're seeing something really small and really insignificant that nobody else can see. And you're thinking, I have to change this. I have to change this. So you're spending weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks trying to change it. Weeks and weeks and weeks, you know, going on diets, going to the gym more and more. And you never feel better because you're just putting yourself on this more and more self-critical pedestal, which you just constantly fall off. And that is a really, really strong root for depression, because you're not accepting yourself for who you are.
So how did you transform that?
There's a lot of work to be done around looking at the causes for that. You know, there's a lot of work to be done around understanding where it comes from, because usually it will come from a pressure that you've created for yourself. It will come from a message that you've internalized in the wrong way. But once you step away from that, once you kind of pick apart the process and understand that it doesn't mean what you think it means, and you look at the message and you think, actually, that was never the case, it becomes a lot easier to make the changes, because you understand that you're not that person. You know, and I talk about a lot with clients about their identity. And there's so many things that make up a person's identity, all the way from the way that they look, from the job that they do, to how funny they are, to where they are in their friendship group. We're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things. The problem is that when your mind is fixated on one thing, you don't see all the other things you've got. You don't see all the other positives in your life. And when you get to that, that's when you're always going to beat yourself up. You're always going to bully yourself for one small thing, because you're making that your identity. So when you understand everything that makes up a part of your identity, and you start to realize that you are so much more than that, it actually becomes quite, I don't want to say easy, because easy is the wrong word to use, but it becomes just a different challenge to progress, and it becomes just a different challenge to start that new phase in your life. So for me, it was about connecting with who I actually was. It was about connecting like who I actually thought I was, and actually seeing that, you know what, there's so much more to me, and I'm excited to explore that, and I'm excited to find that. And once I did that, it was just really uplifting. And going back to what I said at the start too, when other people start seeing you more for who you are, it just becomes really, really validating, because you think, actually, you know, I'm offering so much and I'm making such a difference to other people in my life too.
Right. Yeah, I know. I have people my whole life, even when I was little, you know, just a kid, and people saying, you're so beautiful, or you're so this, or you're so that, and then never really feeling that. And then over time, you know, doing my own work on myself and getting my value and my what works about me or what's great about me, and not comparing myself. And I remember one time I went on vacation and I was looking at the TV was on, and there was news about this beautiful resilient model, and she died. She starved herself to death. And there was this like before and after, and I felt like so sad, right? Obviously, like that she would not get her beauty. And for me, that was when a light bulb went on for me. And I thought to myself, if she can think that she's ugly and kill herself, I can believe that I'm beautiful and really live my life. And it was such a moment of like, aha moment. And it's something that I fall back on a lot. Because of course, you know, the root of those negative thoughts are there sometimes, you know? And so I'll like FaceTime a girlfriend or somebody, and, you know, just like just woke up or whatever. And oh my God, you're so beautiful. Look at you. And I'm just like, seriously, you know? So it really is important for us to, well, and in your work, you know, to really get to the root of those negative perceptions of ourselves, and then actually get to the root of the beauty of who we are in all different ways, and character and aesthetically, sure, you know, but like doing it for ourselves, not to have it, not to be accepted or to have something. I know that when you talk about depression, it was definitely a shift for, you know, like, because I also feel, and I have learned, you know, depression is actually having a future that doesn't inspire you. So if you're just bringing, you know, you're bringing the negative, and my future is always going to be like that, then there's nothing to look forward to. So I don't know. Anyway, went off on a tangent there. But.
And there's also a lot to be said too, as well, about when you're becoming obsessed with money, or you're becoming obsessed with the way you look, or you're becoming obsessed with anything along those lines, you're stepping into the territory of narcissism. And every human being is capable of doing that. That's just the nature of being a human. You know, I spoke about ego at the start and that being a part of it, but regardless of how big someone's ego is, there's always the danger that the more narcissistic side of your personality will begin to evolve. But you have to have that realization that everybody else in the outside world doesn't care as much about the way that you look as you do. Everybody else in the outside world doesn't care about how much you earn or how successful your career is as much as you do. And I think we're all really guilty of kind of seeing ourselves as being kind of like the main star of this film. And we think everybody's watching this film. And actually the reality is we're not like the main star. We're like the second taxi driver from the fifth scene in the world. And on one hand, that sounds a little bit like depressing to think I'm actually insignificant, but there's such a mind shift switch to be had where you just think, actually, it's really not the case. That's uplifting. That's moving, because I can finally live my life the way I want to live my life. Not feeling that I have to be the main star, not feeling that I have to live up to these really, really high standards. And there's a point that I have with my clients where we've really done some work and we've really understood something, and they've been like, okay, I now see it. It doesn't mean what I thought it meant. And we have the what I call the throw that shit away point, when we're talking and they say, you know, they express that they realize that it doesn't mean it and they can move on. And we just say, look, let's just throw that shit away, because it doesn't mean anything. And it's that point where you see the client's mind really begin to transform and really shift into what else they can achieve in life.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because somebody, you know, can be as wealthy as they want or have their met their mark or be as fit or whatever their, you know, their milestone is for success. And then, like, because it's not authentic, it's never going to be, it's not satisfying. So then, you know, it's kind of like our caller earlier question was, you know, how much is enough? So, so a couple things. Okay. How does someone get a hold of you? Because you're pretty, pretty amazing in your coaching and your, just like I've seen your clients just, and have a lot of confidence that would, they could have had it on their own, but you've shifted that in such a short amount of time. Like it may take them 10 years or it may take them the right therapist in 5 years or you know what I'm saying? So how do people get a hold of you?
So my goal with any client is to get them looking forward. So, you know, like you say, it doesn't have to be 10 years. It just has to be, let's find that next step. And then let's find that steps after and we can begin working towards that. So that's what I want to help any client do. In terms of getting hold of me, I can see that you've put my contact page, well, my contact details on the page for the show, which is great. But, you know, in case anybody hasn't got that open, you can follow me on Instagram at Alex Orlando Cross. Follow me on YouTube at just youtube.com/ Alex Orlando Cross, or alternatively, drop me an email on alexorlandocross@hotmail.co.uk. I am doing a offer where I take new clients for a free 30-minute session just so we can have a chat, see what they want to achieve. And that's obviously done free of charge with a view of moving forward.
Cool. Awesome. So this has been, it's been a lot. And I know that I like to date and do all that for fun. And this doesn't sound fun. So let's talk about next week.
So I had a client ask me this week, and he just said such a great question. He just said, when did dating stop becoming fun? And I thought that's a topic in itself, because I think most people that are single, most people are dating, aren't having a lot of fun. I actually think most people are feeling very frustrated. And, you know, I've seen it from clients that I've coached, and I've seen it from my own experiences in the dating world. There's a lot of frustration. So I think it's going to be a really interesting topic to look at why it isn't fun anymore, and then talk a little bit about what you can do to make it fun for you. Because if anybody's listened to the previous shows or seen any of my previous work, I'm all about making dating fun, because dating should be fun. Essentially, you're looking to meet a person that you're going to have either an exciting experience with or share the rest of your life with. So why shouldn't that be fun? Why shouldn't that be exciting? So we're going to talk a lot about that next week.
Cool. Awesome. Okay. So, again, follow Alex on Instagram at Alex Orlando Cross, and on YouTube, you could just search Alex Orlando Cross and you'll find him. Follow this show. Okay. There, you can go to the page and you can follow the show so that you will get an email or whatever form of communication you want, and be notified that we're going to be on. This is a live show, so you can always call in with your questions. We've gone almost an hour. Most shows are, you know, they've been a half hour, but you know, we continue talking as long as we need to. So, what else? Yeah, follow the show, share this show if you feel like it's got, you know, got any value. Just share it with people. You can download the podcast after, probably within 10 minutes when we finish. And I don't know, is there anything else we want to say?
I'll just leave the listeners with just something that I heard the other day, which I found was really, really interesting, especially with everything that you've got going on with COVID-19 and the George Floyd stuff. But I think it's a really, really good reflective point for people to think that what people find irritating in other people tends to be what they find irritating in themselves. And I thought about that myself, and I actually thought, yeah, I can see a lot of overlap, and I can see a lot of that in me too. So I'd encourage anybody just to have that same reflective thought, because it's really interesting. You actually start to see that perhaps the people that you do find irritating are perhaps some of the people that have the closest similarities to you.
I will take that into my week. All right. Well, okay. Well, it's been so great as usual, and we'll see you next week at the same time, right?
Yep. Yes, we will.
Okay, everybody. Have a great week. Bye.